The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
That's right. We are sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com. Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And this is H2O. Welcome, everyone. Tuesday is usually not my day.
No.
Tuesday is usually my Monday.
Mm.
And this particular week, the Tuesday, I was feeling kind of out of sorts most of the day.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why. I was just in a mood, right? And I'm unloading the dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
And I pull out my glass, leaded crystal cut glass, you know, very nice mug that I like to use.
Sure.
Right? And as I'm putting it away into the cabinet, it slips out of my fingers.
Of course.
And I jumble, catch it. Right? Barely catch it.
Right.
And knock it into my Sapphire for Me mug and break the handle off the mug. I was like, oh. Yep, Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, but then there's these links that start showing up all over the internet. This stuff pops up. Marvel stuff. I was like, what is this? Marvel's about to just upset the apple cart, I think.
Well, yeah, because it's very interesting, because this is the what we're referring to, folks, would be the new Marvel Secret Wars series, which we didn't know much about. They were very kind of, you know,
they had announced it at New York Comic Con.
Right, but they hadn't really said anything about what it was.
Right.
And for those of you of a certain age, you will remember the original Secret Wars, which was an alien creature called the Beyonder, grabbed a whole bunch of superheroes and a whole bunch of supervillains and threw them together on a planet and said,
Fight!
Let them fight. And it was a big deal at the time, and a lot of stuff actually came out of that. We had the famous black Spider-Man costume, the whole symbiote, that whole storyline kind of, you know, came out of that, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of different stuff that ended up happening in the larger Marvel universe because of Secret Wars. There was a regrettable sequel, Secret Wars 2, which was kind of awful. Just a personal opinion. And interestingly enough, I went back a few years ago and reread the first Secret Wars and was kind of disappointed. Actually, it did not hold up terribly well, but there's a lot of comics that I think I really enjoyed that did not hold up terribly well. It was a lot of that stuff came out of the 90s, which was a dark time for comic books.
Yes.
Across the board. There was some good indie stuff, but DC and Marvel had some real fun missteps in the 90s. Now, so the announcement, the Marvel, that they were having this Secret Wars series, we're like, oh, well, okay, interesting. But again, not a lot of information. And now we have information.
Yeah, and the internet is blowing up just a little bit.
A little bit.
And it's really interesting that you have so many people going, Marvel, you had one job, to not be DC. You know, it's like, oh, what are they doing this for? Oh, I'm never buying Marvel again. I'm a 30-year Marvel fan, and this is it. This is it for me. I'm done. It's like, boy, wow! This, where have I heard this before? This
is folks, basically, familiar. this is one of the quotes from Axel Alonso. Once you hit Secret Wars number one, there's no Marvel Universe. There's no Ultimate Universe. It's all Battle World. I'm sorry, that's from Tom Brevoort.
Tom Brevoort.
Axel says the Ultimate Universe, the Marvel Universe, they're going to slap together. Imagine two pizzas. They're going to combine toppings. Some toppings are going to drop off. That is the Marvel Universe moving forward. It's more than the Marvel Universe and the Ultimate Universe. It's all the universes you can imagine. It's the Marvel Universe going forward. Yes.
Yeah.
So basically,
it's Crisis on Infinite Earths, Marvel style.
and
30 years to the month.
Yeah,
of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So, don't tell me that's an accident.
So you could, as you can imagine, the internet did kind of explode a little bit.
I find it interesting because when Alonzo said that, he said, "You're going to yell about some stuff that's not there."
Mm-hmm.
And he even said that twice during the press conference, where he said, "Some of you aren't going to be happy about it. You're going to yell about it, and there are going to be some things there that you don't like, and there's going to be some things not there that you would like to have there."
Right.
And I thought it was a really marked contrast to how DC handles these kinds of things. I mean, the comparison is going to be inevitable. And we can talk about what this means for the Marvel universe at large, but for the comics industry too as a whole. The coming in May of 2015, right smack dab in the middle of Convergence, mm-hmm, for DC,
right,
Marvel's got this thing going on.
Sure.
And they've been leading up to it for 2.5-3 years.
Right.
Which is about how long the Crisis on Infinite Earths took 4 years to plan and execute. And they're not doing it in 2 months. It's not a 2-month event like Convergence is doing. I mean, for Crisis on Infinite Earths, the main thread was 12 issues.
Right.
It was a whole year.
Oh, sure.
And for people to sit there and go, "Oh, well, Convergence is going to be two months. It's going to be 2 books." Yeah, well, it's going to be several books, but it's going to be 2 months,
right,
of books. They're suspending all of the other titles during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the 30th anniversary of Crisis, and we're getting these 2 months of what? You know, these hints and teases of other universes.
We don't know. Sure.
But then you get Marvel saying it's going to be eight issues, 8 months,
mm-hmm,
almost a full year. Of the they must fight stuff inside Battle World after 2.5 years leading up to it in Avengers and New Avengers. And, you know, according to Tom Brevoort, Jonathan Hickman had this idea well before he got assigned any of this, Fantastic, mm-hmm, Four or Avengers or anything. He said, "I want to do Secret Wars." But he was thinking of it as a separate event.
Right.
But then as things evolved, they said, "Well, this is the time to do it," because, you know, you had Avengers and New Avengers launching, and you had the Marvel Now,
mm-hmm,
coming into, you know, right after New 52.
Sure.
What was it, 6 months? Mm-hmm. And then we had Marvel Now. And now it's, you know, Marvel Smash. This is the Marvel Smash universe. I'm going to patent that. Trademark that.
There you go.
Marvel, you owe me money now if you use it. The Marvel Smash Universe. That's what we're going to call it. I should send that to Nick Lowe.
You really should.
And say, "Hey, you guys can have this one for free if I get a guest on the show."
Well, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people have pointed out that this finally gives Marvel the excuse to kill off the Ultimate line once and for all.
Yeah. Which a lot of people have said has been overdue anyway, because the stories have played out.
It's such a really interesting. It was such a really interesting experiment, and now it seems to have become. I mean, looking back, it really does feel like an experiment.
Well, Joe Quesada at one point said that at the time they crossed over the universes, they were out of ideas.
Yeah.
So whenever it was, "Let's cross them over." Whenever that happened, I think it was when was it, 92? No, when did they do a crossover?
Well, they did a crossover.
Whenever it was the first crossover happened.
Sure.
At that point, according to Joe Quesada, after that, we were out of ideas.
Right. I think it was probably a Nick Fury crossover with the various Avengers thing. They had a whole plot line with that.
Yeah, and a lot of people were wondering, I've seen comments on the boards that this is an excuse. This gives Marvel a way of bringing in the Sam Jackson, Nick Fury into the mainstream Marvel universe.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Miles Morales gets to who's one of the most, who's definitely become one of the more popular characters out of the Ultimate line.
But they really kind of brought in the Jackson Fury with
Nick Fury Jr.
Yeah, with original Sin. So
right. Well, and Miles Morales has crossed over into the Spider-Man titles, several times. Well, and because the ultimate line, you know, cast your mind back for quite a few years now. Yeah, there you go. It's everything's waving back and forth.
Scooby-Doo.
And you know, here was this really neat idea, which was, you know, take your big titles and start them now. You know, so you got a Spider-Man that starts today. You know, a Peter Parker in high school. You know, right now in this world, in this time. Mm-hmm. You know, a Fantastic Four that starts now, an X-Men that starts now, an Avengers or the Ultimates, and you know, in that particular case, starts now. So you got a chance to basically do what Marvel completely botched with Heroes Reborn. Remember that? Oh, wow. The end of the Onslaught saga in the X-Men, where basically all the Marvel superheroes got killed, except Franklin Richards saved them all and put them into
Dome, a bottle. Oh, wait, no. That's
an alternate Earth with, and let Jim Lee draw everything. And it was terrifying.
Did they all have chin guards?
Well, no, they had there's a famous picture of Captain America you can find online, and his chest is the size of a barrel. I mean, it's literally, you've heard the term barrel chested?
Yeah.
That's what they're talking
literally
about.
Literally did it.
Yeah, because I mean, it's just, you're looking at it going, how do you, someone call a doctor. Wait,
somebody call Liefeld.
He's going to die. Liefeld was a big part of that.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where there's very few really good fond memories of Heroes Reborn. I'm sure it had fans. I'm sure there are people who still loved Heroes Reborn. I don't know any of them.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of anyone who has admitted to it. I was not a fan. But the ultimate line got it right for a long time. Spider-Man was an amazingly well-written reboot of everything we knew about Spider-Man. I mean, it was a time, especially when One More Day came along and traumatized millions of Spider-Man fans by destroying the one good marriage in comic book history.
Right.
One of the two good marriages in comic book history. Thank DC killed off the other one.
Right.
So you had this really fantastic Spider-Man title, a really interesting Fantastic Four title, which, for everything we're hearing about the new Fantastic Four film, they're not following close enough. Even though it seems to be inspired to some degree by the Ultimate Fantastic Four, they're not following it anywhere near close enough from what we can hear.
And some people are looking at this as, you know, Fantastic Four is done. That title is over now with the last issue.
Until the next time.
Right. But, you know, the next time is not going to happen until after Secret Wars and all this stuff comes out. Which then does that impact the rights? Does that impact Fox's ability to make another Fantastic Four movie after this
one? I sincerely doubt it. I just think, I mean, it would be a very poorly written contract for the rights of anything. If they didn't completely blow it out, you know, destroy everything in the contract by releasing the two Fantastic Four films we've already had,
right,
which were not good,
but they were based on the original Fantastic Four, not the Ultimate Fantastic
right.
Four. So there could be something maybe in a clause somewhere.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, it's a stretch, but
it just seems really, really unlikely. I think the whole contract cancellation of the title is just a whole lot of nothing, honestly. It sounds good, the timing seems interesting and all that stuff,
right?
But there are lawyers involved, there are entertainment lawyers involved, and they are not the kind of people who sit there and go, let's leave a gaping loophole that they can come back and take away this property, which we could have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars if we do it right.
Right.
So it just seems so unlikely. Fantastic Four has been canceled before. If everybody forgets that this is what happens with comic books, is that you have runs and then sometimes they don't do well. And then
they go away
and they come back and maybe they do really, really well. People tend to forget that X-Men got canceled
more than once, I think.
Yeah, well, definitely the big one where yeah. where you have the all new X-Men, the big you know the big change where you brought in.
I have copies of that.
Yeah, well, yeah, you brought in Chris Claremont and changed the whole thing and basically you know inspired everything we know about the X-Men. But they were running reprints for 5 years because nobody was really buying the main title, so they got rid of it. You know, and they brought it back, and they brought it back, and so it's you have the, with this. You know, this happens. The whole big Fantastic Four been canceled. You know, now what was really really interesting is that even though DC has certainly made some missteps, I don't recall them ever treating any of their big. Alternate universe titles with quite the sense of we want to kill this in an extremely painful way that Marvel treated the Ultimate line at the end. Because starting a few years ago, basically Marvel sat there and went, let's kill everyone. let's kill Peter Parker. And everyone sat there and went, what? You know, let's kill off half the X-Men. Let's kill, death and destruction and death and oh my god, death. I mean, the Wasp gets eaten, you know, by the Blob, and it's just like, what's happening here? Giant tidal waves that just, you know, drown half the characters. Like, what is going on? You know, there was kind of a trend. DC was doing a little bit of it too, but over in the Wildstorm universe, back before they folded in New 52, where it was apocalyptic. You know, and yeah, there's a certain audience for the apocalypse. Look at the movies. I mean, we get this stuff, you know, in waves where it's like everybody loves the apocalyptic fiction.
I don't.
Well, if it's well done, I'm still waiting for a really quality version of I Am Legend, which I hear we're getting a reboot. Mm-hmm. Which, you know what? Hey guys, it's a horror movie. Okay, it's a horror movie about a guy who discovers he's the monster. All right?
Oh, it's, spoilers.
Yeah, well, you know what? Yes. that's how it's supposed to end. And it's not supposed to end with Will Smith and butterflies and any of this stuff. No, I'm sorry. You could have Will Smith in it. He could play the part.
It's a cookbook.
Give him a script, for the love of God. But, you know, so it was this kind of weird thing. Well, here we have what a lot of us were seeing coming for a long time is okay, we're getting rid of the Ultimate Universe is going bye-bye. Okay. I mean, you kind of killed it off a few years ago for a lot of readers. I mean, the only good thing that I could say that came out of it was Miles Morales.
And a lot of people have said that.
I mean, he's for
he's a favorite.
Well, yeah, because he's a well-written character. They dealt with the fact that he was replacing a very, very popular character in a way that was extremely well handled, because not only did they do it in the comics for the audience reading it, but they also did it with the characters in the comics, recognizing that there were people who were upset, who knew Peter, who were upset that there was a new Spider-Man, and they felt it was, you know, disrespectful, or they were, you know, it was trampling.
How dare he take over?
Like, which people react. Yeah. That's the way, that it was very human. And they handled that really, really well. And Miles Morales, you know, for all the at the time there were all the discussion about, you know, change in ethnicity and you know, stunt writing and all this stuff. They backed up their storytelling right there by making him a character who actually you go, okay. All right, I'm on board with this because this is a well done thing.
It was a risk that they could afford to take in the Ultimate line because it doesn't negate what you're doing with Peter Parker in the 616 universe.
Right, and for
so you get the best of both, basically.
Right, and I think that for a lot of Spider-Man readers of 616 universe who were unhappy with some of the things that had happened in the main title, you had a new character without a lot of the baggage. There was, you know, you had baggage, but it was baggage that fit in that universe, but you didn't have a lot of the baggage of, they did this because they wanted to drive sales, and they had to do, you know.
Right.
We, you know, superheroes can't be happy with people they love, and you know, other such nonsense.
Marriage.
Exactly. Although you've seen the artwork. which
I have
has
the Amazing Spider-Man.
That's right, where it's like, wait a minute.
Yep. Yep.
What madness is this?
Well, and part of that looks like it's going to be a smash-up of various different timelines and universe. Very, very much like Convergence is doing over in DC. It's almost like somebody went there and went, hey, they're doing that. Hey, we could do it too, you know?
Yeah, well, and you know, and you have to wonder, for all the fact that we know they're competitors, these guys don't really operate in a bubble.
Well, and how many people are working for Marvel now who started at DC in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Right.
Who left DC because of everything that was going on with New 52 and editorial and yada yada, mm-hmm. and they left, and now they're working at Marvel.
And what's curious is that even though I'm still not a fan of the New 52, it seems like a lot of the things, a lot of the really terrible things, the things that I thought were terrible. Let me qualify that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody's got their own taste, right? One of the things that I was not happy about New 52, a lot of that seems to have worked itself out. I'm not a fan. And we can talk about this in a little bit because we've both seen. You saw the Justice League Atlantis.
The Throne of Atlantis.
The Throne of Atlantis, yeah.
I haven't seen the movie yet.
Okay, well.
I haven't got my copy yet.
All right, well, I can talk a little bit about that in a minute because I have seen it. So you and I are not the biggest fans of what they're doing with the animated films right now. They've had some good stuff, I think. There's been some good titles, but I think that the last few especially have been New 52 and not happy.
Everything that James Tucker has done, everything James Tucker has been responsible for, from Flashpoint forward, all of that's crap that I can't watch with my kid. And that's Tucker's. You know, Bruce Timm had a couple that were skating just a little bit, but they weren't as blatantly over the top. I can't watch them with my kid as anything.
So I think the
Suicide Squad's the worst.
Well, I think the stuff. Well, I think there was now that when they maybe we'll talk about this now. they ended up doing that thing where they went from original storytelling in the films to very much the New 52 wave of films.
Yeah.
And
although a lot of the animated, the pre-New 52 animators were based on graphic novels.
Sure, sure. Well, some of the
story arcs.
Right, well, you used something of the Red Hood, and you had the Dark Knight Returns, and, excuse me, but
Crisis on Two Earths.
Crisis on Two Earths, which I actually really, really enjoyed.
Yep.
Which is actually really, really dark. Also not something to watch with your kids, but...
But it's not as bad. But
It fit for the kind of story they're telling. I think they for that kind of story, if you look at an evil version of Superman or an evil version of Batman, an evil version of Wonder Woman, that's, you know, you have to have that sense of darkness to it because that should be scary a little bit.
Yeah.
But you have things like Throne of Atlantis and to me, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't anything particularly. I mean, you have the best part about it is that it's an Aquaman story.
Yeah.
And I'm not, and for the folks at home, that may sound a little odd, but one of the things that New 52 has actually gotten right was they had good writing teams for Aquaman.
And I'm going to go back to a prediction that I made at the beginning of New 52.
Yes.
Because I think we're seeing the end game in this.
Oh, I think so too.
I think, and I really hate to give DC editorial this kind of credit, because I don't think they're this clever, but the way it's playing out, it really does feel like New 52 was a marketing gimmick, but also an experiment to sit there and say, okay, how do we shake up the universe and find some new titles that we can then integrate back into the pre-New 52 universe so that the really strong selling titles from pre-New 52 now combined with the new 52 titles that are selling really well, which I think is why you had so much turnover, you know, 6 months and two months and, they've only sold 20,000 and they're done and whatever. They're throwing mud up against the wall to try to find the titles that sell consistently and good numbers. And now we've got Convergence coming up. We're going to be able to take those new 52 titles.
Right.
Which don't number 52 anymore. You take the new 52 titles and you integrate them into the pre-new 52 stuff that was working.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was some stuff that wasn't.
Sure.
Okay, fine.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and then you're basically creating a new Convergence universe, very much like what Marvel's doing.
Yeah, well, I think that one thing, and here's the reason why I definitely agree with you. I don't think this was a big plan, a hard, solid plan for DC. And that's the exodus of the talent.
Yeah.
Okay. If this had been something that they had mapped out, well, let me add a caveat to that. This may have been the plan. This may have been the plan from day one, and it was
up top.
It was up top, and it was poorly executed when it came to the talent.
Yeah.
Or they decided that it was time for the big reboot of the universe, and they went and they started in, and then very quickly began to see that. They may have made a terrible, terrible mistake. Whatever it is, and at some point the story will come out. At some point there will be the big discussion.
I don't think it'll come out until DiDio and Lee are gone.
I don't know, because, you know, possibly, but it will come out. We got the whole backstory about how the spider clone saga, you know, all the dirt on that. You can find that online. It's a fascinating read.
Right.
You know, that stuff's out there. We'll get the word from one or the other, but it's one of those things where they did get some things right with New 52. You know, their horror titles they revived horror titles that DC had been struggling with for years and years. And you would find a handful over in Vertigo,
which though. To be fair, though, the horror titles weren't part of the pre-New 52 continuity, so that was something...
Right.
I mean, it was a Vertigo title. It wasn't anything that got changed, quote-unquote, along the DC lines. They did get changed.
To some degree, they did, because, I mean, you look at something like Swamp Thing, and I've used Swamp Thing as an example before, because Swamp Thing came roaring back. They actually hired people who knew how to write horror.
Right, but I'm just saying that was basically introduced to a brand-new audience rather than reintroducing
because a lot of the really good horror titles had gone.
Right.
If they'd been part of the mainstream universe, like Swamp Thing was... and for a good chunk of its career, its print time, it was part of the mainstream universe. Because he crossed over with Batman, and there's a famous Batman Swamp Thing crossover story, and there's actually a couple of them.
Didn't Alan Moore write that?
Yeah, I think he wrote at least one of them. Yeah. So you had this because there was a Jason Woodrue that was post Alec discovering that he was actually a plant who thought he was a man and was angry a little about feeling that he'd been lied to. So you had this roar back of the horror titles. You also had characters like Aquaman, who suddenly, after years of false starts and occasionally a good series that would run out of steam. They were getting right. They were writing him like a king.
Well, Geoff Johns was writing him.
Yeah.
Well, that right there is enough to at least recommend a first read to see what they were doing with it, because Geoff Johns doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes.
No, I mean, and he's not a perfect writer.
No.
And he certainly has some critics. But to be perfectly honest, he loves comics. I mean, you can tell.
Yeah.
He loves The Flash. He loves Green Lantern.
And he loves the lore around all of those characters.
And I think that is a huge plus. And I will be much, I will, you know, he's one of those writers who, if I hear he's writing the title, I'm going, I'm at least going to start reading it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's him and Grant Morrison. I'll check out something from Alan Moore.
Scott Snyder.
These are guys these are people who care about the characters, and you and I have mentioned a couple of thousand times, story is king, and they understand story, so that's a plus.
Now, so who over at Marvel, if you've got, because Jonathan Hickman has been the rising star over there, he's had fantastic, he's had a run on Fantastic Four and Avengers and New Avengers, and now with Secret Wars, you've got Jason Aaron.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, he's got the ball for Star Wars. He's writing Thor. He's had a run on some X-Men titles.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Grecian's been over there doing some really good stuff that's been well received. Who's over at Marvel that you see the name and you're going to at least pick up the first couple of issues to see what's going on?
Huh.
Mark Waid?
Mark Waid, sure, yeah. Wow, who else?
Well, Hickman's over there. He was doing Earth 2.
Robinson.
Robinson.
Yeah, James Robinson.
James Robinson.
Well, and James Robinson for years and years and years, because he's somebody else who, leaving aside that he wrote the script to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and we all have our terrible crosses to bear, he had that amazing run on Starman,
mm-hmm.
which is a character that I understand why they haven't brought back, because Robinson was kind of like, I'm done with that story.
Yeah.
But he was a DC writer for a really, really long time. And he's another one of the talent switch. Gosh, who else? Who's writing X-Men right now?
That's a good question. We'll look that up. And we'll see on the other side of this what titles have been announced as part of this new Marvel smash-up.
Yes.
When we come back from this break, you can listen and hear a message from our sponsor, SuperheroStuff.com. They are purveyors of fine licensed merchandise. I don't know if I get tired of saying that or if people get tired of hearing that, but we are going to take a break and refill our coffee mugs.
True.
Yes. And we will be right back. H2O continues right after this. Stay tuned.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Our podcast where we discuss these shows and story arcs, character development, plot twists, misses, and wins. Or if you'd rather check in for a quick recap read, we have you covered there as well. So join us for some DC flavored morsels at sci-fi4me.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio until you unsubscribe in a sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we are brought to you by SuperheroStuff.com and very maybe possibly brought to you in part by you. We've got this new thing on our website. We haven't really talked about it a whole lot. Oh, if you go over to sci-fi4me.com, on the right-hand side, there's a little button, there's a little widget. It's marked Support Us. And if you are a regular listener to any of our podcasts, or you're a regular visitor to our website, first of all, thank you. We're glad that you keep coming back. You find something at least interesting enough to stay or stick around.
We do try to entertain.
We do try. And so one of the things that we've been trying to do this year, that we're going to be endeavoring to do is more coverage. We've got all of these podcasts, and that requires equipment and software and resources, and we're going to be trying to hit more conventions.
Yes.
And that involves equipment and resources and travel and all of this stuff. So and we've got some other things that we're going to try to do in the way of our Sci-Fi for Me radio arm of things, where we're going to try to do some radio theater and some other stuff and things in the
stuff
works.
Stuff and things.
Stuff and things. So,
Sci-Fi for Me. We bring you stuff and things.
And that's going to be that'll be our slogan for our 10th anniversary.
There we go.
Which is actually not that far away. Yeah. We have got this new, it's a support button. You can click on there, and if you are so inclined and you like what we do and you want to support us, then it's very much like public television.
Sure.
Or public radio, where you can, you know, and you'll click on the button and go through PayPal and send us money, and we would very much appreciate it. But it's not an obligated thing.
I mean, no, because like have to. It's just a way that if you are so inclined to help support what we do, and this is not a way that we're. You know, Jason and I are not going to go off on some, like, you know, quick, let's go to the bar. It's not, you know, that's not what this is for. You know, this is money that's going to go back into scififorme.com. This is going to be, you know, give us an opportunity to go maybe a little further than we can currently go distance-wise to go to a convention.
Right.
Or buy a piece of gear that enables us to bring you something a little more... professional looking when we're at a convention, or, you know, this is stuff going back into scififorme.com.
Well, I know we do have we have been talking about doing maybe needing another sign, another banner, mm-hmm. Over on the Sci-Fi for Chicks endeavors. Heather has got some gear that she's needing to update and upgrade, mm-hmm. and, you know, so it's just little tiny things that are, you know, back and forth and. It would just help,
yeah,
a little.
Yeah.
I mean, we do what we do because we like what we do,
right?
And you know, we do.
We're clearly
everything.
Not in it for the money.
No, clearly not. But you know, the things that we're able to do because of the equipment that we do have. This is all pretty much scrounged together from everybody's personal collection of stuff. Where, you know, microphones and cameras and whatnot. So we'd like to just kind of augment that a little bit. And the people that don't own cameras or don't own microphones and stuff, just to supplement some of the things that we're doing here. So there's the NPR PBS pitch for now. Now back to our program. We are talking about Marvel's Smash Universe.
Right, and we did want to say that we were talking about writers over at Marvel that you're like, oh hey, you know, oh I got to read them when they Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah,
and Catherine, I think it's Immonen.
Immonen.
Her husband Stuart is, you know, they're both artists.
Is Walt Simonson doing anything anymore? Is he?
Oh, is he, you know, retired, what? I don't know. He's not dead.
Not yet.
I feel happy.
Yeah, it's just a fish wound.
I don't know if he's working on anything right now. But yeah, no. Catherine and Stuart both do really fine work. So I see their names, and it's but Brian Michael Bendis is a big one. He's a big one over at Marvel, and I think that's well, and, you know, Marvel's
Bendis just did the whole Doc Ock as Spider-Man thing. You know, the whole superior mm-hmm. Spider-Man stuff, and that mixed reviews at the beginning, but I think as that progressed, the response got a little more positive.
Well,
I think
that what ended up happening there was that you were telling they took a big chance that could have come across as very, very gimmicky, and I think that we all knew that Peter Parker was coming back at some point. You know, you can't have Doc Ock.
What?
Yeah, I know. Is that spoiler alert? But at the same time, they let it go on long enough and let them play out what that would be like long enough that you could actually have interesting stories. I enjoyed that much, much more than, and I haven't read the Superior Iron Man.
I haven't either.
Any of that stuff yet. But that doesn't, I didn't have the same reaction when I heard about that. You know, it's like, let's look at, Superior Spider-Man was actually really cool. Let's do, I don't know. It's something about, Tony Stark, who's arrogant and unapproachable. Wait,
what?
What? You know, so I'm not feeling
not
this.
Like
is
we a, haven't heard that before,
right? So I don't know. So you know, you tell us, folks. I mean, is Superior Iron Man worth reading?
I want to see a Marvel team up between Iron Man and Rocket Raccoon.
Well.
Because we're going to get Guardians of the Galaxy and Howard the Duck in a one shot, I think. I think Guardians 24, I think, or one of the issues.
Is it really?
It's going to be a sequel that leads right out of that end credits piece.
Is it really
out of the movie? Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So the implications of all of this are that we're gonna have a brand new Marvel universe that's a combination of a lot of different things, and not just the 616 universe, not just the Ultimate Universe, those two, but it's going to be smashing everything together. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I don't remember there being a whole lot more universes that that would be in that group. I mean, you've got 616, you've got Marvel, you've got 1616, I think.
I believe that's the
2099.
Yeah,
the future world. Planet Hulk, I guess, would be considered an alternate. Would that be considered an alternate universe at this point?
No, but I think Planet Hulk is definitely. I mean, it's in the 616 universe. It's
but the thing that Axel Alonso said that. Where was it? He says, as everyone knows, we're a big, big universe, a shared universe, and we've done a few events over the years. A few. Every time we were planning an event through Axis, Original Sin, AVX, every single time we've done an event, we've always had to be mindful of Secret Wars. So this is something that all of these different events and crossovers and whatnot have all been part of this overall giant master plan. And according to Alonso, everybody at Marvel has been on board with this. So all of the departments, all of the different divisions, all of the different editorial branches and whatnot, they've all been part of this plan. And it really does imply a more cohesive editorial stake, as it were, rather than what you'd get a sense of from hearing stories about what DC was doing.
Well, and I think that comes back to the fact that we just don't really think that DC went into New 52 with a real solid plan, or at least a plan that was developed enough. I mean, clearly they had a plan.
Yeah.
But the problem is that it seems, and again, we don't know for sure, but it seems from everything we've seen and heard from the creator exodus,
mm-hmm.
that it was not a plan that was either communicated well, or was a plan that was developed beyond a, hey, let's reboot our universe.
Yeah. Now, well, because, you see interviews from Dan DiDio and Jim Lee talking about, the 2.5 years that they took to plan it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I got a chance to sit down and talk with Len Wein one time, and we talked about, Watchmen, and we talked about the Crisis, because he was part of that.
Right.
And, according to him, 4 years to plan Crisis. And
oh, sure.
That was one of those things where I'm like, okay, if it took 4 years and 12 months to execute Crisis on Infinite Earths, and you had all of these crossovers and all of these universes smashing up. Now you've got New 52, which took maybe about an hour.
Freudian slip
maybe,
there?
Maybe an hour. A year and a half maybe to plan, 2 years to plan. And now you've got, Marvel coming in and smashing all of their stuff together with a 2.5-3 year plan. But now it makes you wonder because, DC may have planned New 52 in 2.5 years, but the execution did not take 2.5 years to get up to the Flashpoint.
No.
Marvel's taking, again, we talk about playing the long game here because Marvel apparently, according to Axel Alonso, all of the different little smash-ups that they did, all of these different events and everything else have been part of the lead up to Secret Wars. So they all knew it was coming.
Yeah, it seems like they
and well, everybody was on board with it. That was the thing, is everybody knew what was going on.
Right.
And everybody was on board and everybody was doing their part to lead readers down into that path so we'd know what was going on.
Well, and I think that, if nothing else, they learned the lesson of New 52.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, they learned the lesson of the public perception of New 52. Because again, for all whatever plans
right.
they DC had, the perception, and perception is reality, folks. It's not fair. It's not true. It's not a real thing. But perception is reality. All you have to do is look at politics or and anything of import of quote unquote importance
Facebook.
Anymore. Facebook, you know.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
He made a face, folks, and is pointing and everything. So it's just, you know, it's no matter what DC had in mind, we ended up with something that was a little traumatic all the way around for fans, for creators, and whatever plans they may have had, whatever their goal was, the perception was is that they were botching it. And for all the stuff that did, all the things, like I said, there's been some good stuff coming out of the New 52. But it's been so overshadowed by things that have made fans sit there and go, why is Superman wearing body armor?
Yeah.
Why can't superheroes be happy? How did
Batman's entire career happen in 5 years?
Exactly. You know,
he went through three sidekicks in 5 years. Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. So
where's,
I mean,
Stephanie?
I think that you end up with this real, well, okay.
Well, you see they've brought Donna Troy back.
No.
Yes.
Wait, what?
She is, yeah, she appeared at the end of Wonder Woman number 37, the new people over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she is now made from clay, brought into reality by Hecate.
Mm-hmm.
And is the anti-Wonder Woman. She is basically Diana, the mirror of Diana without her heart.
Aha.
And she's going to be an antagonist.
Sure.
Possibly a villain.
Sure.
And everybody's like, that's not Donna Troy.
Well, except in the pre-New 52, there was a villainous version of Donna Troy.
Yeah, and everybody sits there and goes, we don't want that one.
Well, no. No. But
We want the girl next door Donna Troy.
Well,
we don't
sure.
want the bad Donna
well, and
Troy.
Well, I want a Teen Titans that has costumes that don't look stupid. I think, you know, honestly, one of the things that bothers me the most about New 52, and this is an aesthetic thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an art degree, all right? I've got a graphic design degree. I'm a production designer, although I rarely do anymore just because of time and other things and other avenues.
We should have you do some of the book covers for our library, our
online
a few
things
library.
Like that. I'm a very, very good illustrator. I'm not a good sequential artist. So, I mean, I unfortunately would never be a good comic book artist.
Well, that just takes practice.
Yes and no. I mean, yes, practice is important. Any you know, practice is always important, no matter how talented you are. Mm. But there is a skill. There is an innate skill, I believe, that the really great comic book artists have for sequential art. There's a way of looking, consistently drawing a character who looks the same panel to panel. And that, yeah. I think that's innate. In any event, God, I hate the costumes of the New 52. I do. It really bothers me how some of them, a lot of it feels like bad 90s costumes. Mm. Remember that whole,
yeah.
You know, then, okay,
yeah.
Admittedly, we have a shortage of crazy shoulder pads. We have a shortage of of bandoliers, but there are too many bandoliers in the New 52
and lines,
and straps,
Well, of course, the flip side of that, Starfire barely has a costume at all.
Well, I know. It's just, well, and her original costume wasn't exactly conservative.
But it covered more than the current.
Oh yeah,
one,
no, definitely no argument there. Well, it's I think that. And Marvel is guilty of this as well. Just remember the whole Spider-Woman cover from not too long ago.
Yeah.
It's just,
although that was a variant.
I know. Still, pro tip: when when hiring an artist to draw one of your characters, even though he is, even though this artist is one of the finest erotic artists in the world. Note the qualifier in the front.
Yeah.
Milo Manara is an amazing erotic artist.
Yeah. What do you expect he's going to draw?
Exactly. So, but you know, that's.
Now, I did see out of that flap of the whole, well, that's just anatomically impossible. Mm-hmm. And, they did the 3D modeling,
right, sure,
and the CG. But then I saw a cosplayer. I saw an actual photograph of a cosplayer doing that pose.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I can't remember where I saw it, but it was close. It wasn't exact.
Well,
but it was as close enough as humanly possible that you can do, and it looked okay.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that image of Mary Jane Watson with the white Spider-Man T-shirt, and she had the short shorts?
Yeah.
And they came out, and they were like, no one can actually sit like that. I mean, that's just not, you can't actually, your legs don't bend that way unless you've got like real issues. There was a female cosplayer. Well, that would make sense. I'm not saying a male cosplayer couldn't pull it off. But there was a
the Hawkeye initiative being,
there we go.
There.
There was a young lady, and she had more tattoos, than were in the original art, but she looked remarkably like that illustration. I mean, physically, the way her body was. I mean, just, and I looked at it going, wow. She wasn't sitting like that. She was just standing there, but I was just going, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, we're used to a certain amount of stylization in some of our comic book characters. And you look at it and go, that's a really cool image. But, you know, you don't expect someone to look like that.
Right.
And then you see somebody like that and you're going, you know, I hope she's actually a comic book fan, and that someone just didn't sit there and go, you look just like Mary Jane, you should do this thing. I hope she looked at that and went, hey, that looks like me.
I can do that.
That would be cool. You have that moment where it's like, you know, I can do that. But no, it's one of those neat cosplay moments.
You mentioned Google.
Yes.
You mentioned Google a minute ago. And this is something I think we're going to cover a little bit on Week in Review. Google is considering, have you seen this news? Considering an investment in SpaceX.
Well, you know, is Google and Amazon and Facebook all converge into Skynet?
What's going to happen, because they've already bought the company that builds the robot dogs.
Yeah. Did you see
the? And now, is because the reason they're looking at this SpaceX is for SpaceX communication satellites.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's coming. It's coming, man.
There was some great article about it was a robotics guy, and I want to say it might have been a Cracked magazine article. I can't remember, but it was like, this is why the robot apocalypse will never happen.
Oh right, I remember you telling me.
Because it's like, you know, they'll be like trying to leave the room, and they'll keep bumping into the corner of the door, and they won't be able to get out because they're not well designed enough. And you know, the best, the scariest, most dangerous robots we've already bolted to the floor, and they can't. You know, it's like, I'm going to build a car at you. You know, so it's like, and there's nobody to reprogram them. Yep. I mean, you can't. So it's like, I'm like, yeah, you got a point. I have maintained for years that the problem will be is that they will all have GPS programmed in, and they will consistently be told to turn left into a field because that's what the GPS tells them to go.
Rerouting.
Exactly.
Rerouting.
And it's like, where are the humans? The humans are here. No, the humans are not in here because it says this is an empty field. And we'll be on the other side behind them going,
GPS satellite lost.
Exactly.
It's like, I don't know how many times I have heard that since my Google Maps updated, I think two updates ago. And it is the worst update out of all of the Google, out of all the times you have to update your apps.
But the
Google Map is just terrible now.
The one on my phone has, for the last week, told me that I am 40 minutes away from work.
Uh-huh.
While I am at work.
At work.
I'm like, am I supposed to be? Am I supposed to be working?
I look at this map on this smartphone. I was like, you're not a smartphone. You're a stupid phone. You don't know where you are.
I told my boss I was going to be really, really late for work because I'm 40 minutes away. And clearly, I'm going to be late. So I'd like to call in and apologize.
But yeah, this last update on Google Maps was the worst because it puts me out in the middle of nowhere to start. And then, you know, GPS satellite, I have to put the phone up on the dashboard so it can look through the windshield to find a satellite.
Right.
And it's worse when you got cloud cover, of course.
Of course.
And it does find you, then it's got you at the beginning of your route.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, I know where you are. You're back here. He's like, no, I was back there 15 minutes ago. I'm actually up here now.
Well, and the fun part is, the really amazing part is that what all of this stuff can do when it works. And the fact that we expect it to work.
Yeah.
The way that we do. And we have gotten spoiled. And I think,
I've got a Rand McNally map book in my car.
Oh, sure.
And it has never.
It's never crashed?
Never crashed.
Hey, how many phone numbers can you remember right now?
That's a good one.
Do you remember yours?
I know mine.
Okay.
Do
you know your cell phone number? Not your home phone number, because you just got a landline.
No, I don't. The landline's gone now.
Oh, okay.
So I've got the cell phone number. Mm-hmm. I know my ex-wife's cell phone number. Mm-hmm. I know my parents' phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much it.
Remember when we used to remember all these
all
numbers?
All of the phone numbers. I know. I knew the next neighbor and they crossed the street and down.
And to some degree, that's the way it always has worked.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean,
there's a hierarchy and you've got...
Sure.
Seven rungs on the ladder, I guess.
In pre-tech days, you know, it was, you know, they were finding the same things happening with you know, just books in general. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon. We just happen to be seeing it happen very quickly. Did you see? Well, we have wandered far afield, but I can't help with this. Have you seen the upgrade on Atlas?
No.
The new the Pentagon's humanoid robot. He got an upgrade.
Oh.
Yeah. He's stronger, more energy efficient. He's quieter. Let me say that again.
He's quieter.
Yeah. Not silent, but they're making him quieter, which means silent is
not too
possible.
Yeah.
He's kind of scary looking. It's you know. There is. Oh yeah, he doesn't require a tether anymore, so he's free range. He's a free range giant robot that the Pentagon has built. DARPA at work.
The behest of Google.
At the behest of Google. That's right. Well, luckily, the good news is that he's not quite in Terminator territory. And looking at the legs. Yeah, he's not walking over a field of broken human skulls. It's not happening.
Although that musician dancer who's got the artificial leg, you put a couple of those on Atlas.
You know what? I think that
I don't think he'll be as graceful as she is.
No.
That's talent.
Oh yeah,
that's impressive.
Well, and it's fascinating. It's fascinating. Where we have gone in terms of robotics and some of the things they got the rat tests where they've been regenerating nerves so that paralyzed rats could walk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just some of this stuff, you know, for all the joking about Skynet, some of this technology that we've been able to do, the guy who has the artificial arms that he can control with his mind.
Yes,
I mean this is amazing leaps for real issues, real problems, real things that some of this technology is solving.
Well, and now with 3D printing, you saw the kid who got the stormtrooper arm.
Yeah,
yeah, that was cool.
You can go buy a 3D printer. You and I could go down. We don't have the money at this time.
Again, there is a support us button on the main site.
Help us buy a 3D printer. No.
If you want to bring it back to a practical application, I have talked about, because I've got a friend of mine, because we've got these little things called microphone flags.
Yeah.
You know, little inside baseball. These are the cubes that sit on a microphone that have got the logo of the network. So, you know,
sure.
ABC, ESPN, all that. So we've got a few of these. Mm-hmm. And the way that we can have as many as we do is we buy blanks.
Right.
Because they're not as expensive. It's $14 or $80.
Right.
You know, to get one with our logo printed on it. So it's just, you know, you buy the blank, you print some labels, you slap them on there, and you've got a mic flag. Whereas if we have a, you know, we're going to come up with a 3D model design for a mic flag and then go down to the public library where they have a 3D printer and print out a mic flag.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like, you know, as much as I complain about where technology has taken us, sometimes it really is kind of cool.
We actually, the fun part is, of course, is that because we are a science fiction website, we are a science fiction fantasy website, some of the best storytelling is about the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
Because science, you know, speculative fiction is the core of all of this. It's, you know, science, whether it's science fiction or fantasy or horror or just a lot of the different genre fiction, just whatever you want to call it, it's speculative fiction. It's what if ...
Mm-hmm.
And some of our best science fiction and fantasy writers have looked at the world and said, what if this went wrong?
Yeah.
And you've had some, you know, Star Trek. At its core is a story about hope, but Star Trek has also at the core of it a what if things went terribly, terribly wrong in the early 21st century.
Yes.
And mankind had to rebuild, and what would we become if we almost destroyed ourselves?
Right.
What would we become? We
become that whole nuclear better. Holocaust, World War III.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. We become better. Well, and
so let's bring it back around to what if Marvel was to,
which was a fantastic series Marvel used to have.
Well, and that's one of the things that they were saying, that this is not one of those. This is not an Elseworlds.
Right.
This is not a what if.
I miss Elseworlds too.
But the titles that we've seen so far,
mm-hmm,
as part of this, you mentioned the Spider-Man thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've got The Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows.
Mm-hmm.
And on the cover, we have Peter Parker, Mary Jane, and their daughter.
And their daughter.
And it looks like they're picking up before One More Day.
Well, actually, they'd be picking up after One More Day because the daughter hadn't been born yet.
Right, but I'm just saying, they're picking up that thread.
Right.
As opposed to after One More Day, where they're not married.
Right.
All right, we've got Years of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies. Hang on a second. These are the titles that so far we've seen.
I really want to read that one.
Another AVX.
Okay.
Avengers versus X-Men.
Sure.
House of M.
Mm-hmm.
The End. I don't know what that one looked like.
The End series were you know, Wolverine, The End. Punisher, The End.
Okay.
So it was the final.
Okay.
It was the final.
So that's back.
Right.
The Amazing Spider-Man. Age of Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Armor Wars.
Interesting.
Old Man Logan.
Considering Logan is currently dead. Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Planet Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And Future Imperfect. Now, I'm not clear on if those are two separate titles or if it's Planet Hulk, Future Imperfect, because I saw it. Two different ways. Inhumans, Adelin Rising.
Mm-hmm.
And the Infinity Gauntlet.
Interesting.
And that's just the first wave. They're not done announcing titles. Tom Brevoort said that over the next 2 weeks, they're going to be announcing what comes after Battle World.
What's interesting is that almost all of those titles are story arc titles.
Yeah, they are.
Generally. Or variations off story arcs as opposed to individual comic book titles.
Yeah. And so. Battle World is basically to be like what they're doing with Convergence. So they're taking for those of you who missed the press release, basically what it is, they have these incidents called incursions, where two universes come together they're on a collision course, and of course it's all centered around Earth for whatever reason, because story. Yeah, for reasons. And either the two universes will pass through each other and everything will be fine, or they smash together and one of them survives and the other one doesn't. And at the end of all of this, all of these final incursions, all these things happen, what's going to be left are going to be pieces of each universe, which then get put into this place called Battle World. It's going to be a melting pot. There's going to be all of the different patchworks of story arcs and universes and whatnot. And this is what's going to become the new Marvel Universe post-Battle World. So they're taking Earth and they're shaping it differently so that all of the different story arcs and the different universes are there on the planet. And then after that, there'll be one universe that has all of these different elements in it. And some of the stuff is going to go away that you've been reading, and some of the stuff is going to be brand new, and some of the stuff won't change, I guess. But that's, yeah. there's an online element to it, too, because you go to Marvel.com, and you can actually go into the Secret Wars section, and there is a battle world, an interactive battle world map that's going to show you all of the different places where these stories take place and all of these different things are going on. And some of them are not... some of them are not revealed yet.
Classified. Yes. I do find this rather amusing because, let's see, number 41 is The Wall. Number 40 is New Xandar, which is, generally speaking, a alien planet. A place called Perfection, the Deadlands, Limbo, Bar Sinister, Arcadia. Number one is Greenland. It seems a little bit,
Well,
and weird world, utopias, King James England, the Regency, Spiderland, Greenland.
Well, and the funny part is when you look at they did the teaser animation.
Mm-hmm.
The Planet Hulk cover goes to Greenland. So if you go to Greenland, right now it says incursion imminent, but somewhere up there. Number two is Dystopia, which is right next to Greenland, and that's got the Incredible Hulk Future Imperfect attached to it.
Right.
So right up in there is going to be the Hulk stories.
Right.
And it's just, it's going to be really interesting to see how this goes. But yeah, you've got this.
Greenland is huge on the map, by the way.
Oh, I know. And it was funny. Brevoort made the joke that if you wanted to read those stories, you had to go to Greenland. This is where you're going to find those books, in Greenland.
So. But there's a 2099 country space area.
There's a Marvel, Arachnia, and Spider Island both represented there.
Right. The Eye of Agamotto, which has got to be a really, really scary place to visit. Mm. I mean, it's like step into Doctor Strange's surreal world.
New Quack City is there.
Yes.
See that? Yeah. It is going to be interesting
Trapped in a world he never made.
It is going to be interesting to see how this all comes together. Especially because... As much as we talk about Marvel and DC being competitors, and we've mentioned that here, and the movies being the way they are, and people have wondered, what is this going to do to the movie universe? I don't think it's going to do anything.
No, it's not going to do a thing to it.
But the comparisons are always going to be made. The comparisons between Marvel and DC in the movies.
Oh, sure.
There's no question that Marvel is just knocking it out of the park, and DC is staggering.
Well,
there's no clear indication that the DC and Warner Brothers guys know what they're doing yet.
Right, because because they've only got one movie.
Right, but then you compare the books, you compare the publishing side of things, and it's going to be really interesting. This gives us a very, very unique opportunity to analyze and to measure the efforts of two different publishers doing essentially the same thing at the same time.
Yeah.
In a little bit different ways, sure.
Right, but in broad strokes,
they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And they're both doing it on the 30th anniversary of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I've got to wonder, is Marvel honoring Crisis? Is this Marvel's way of acknowledging the universe smash up that Crisis on Infinite Earths did, because it was the first one.
Oh, yeah.
And two, the concept of the event arcs, because Crisis started that too. And maybe Marvel is sitting there going, DC's not really doing very much for this 30th anniversary thing. Let's do our version. Well, here's what we come up with.
Remember, there was a time when instead of actually saying DC, They used to call, Marvel used to sit there and refer to them as the distinguished competition.
Yes.
I mean, there's, for all the fact that, yes, they are competitors. And for all the fact that we've seen, you know, the talent exodus from DC. You know,
there's always been a sense of respect between
well,
the two.
At least
publicly.
And in a perfect world, they should be. You want a worthy competitor. You want the guy who you're trying to beat in sales to be worth going up against.
Yeah.
And I think that when both of them, because I mean, Marvel has had its dark periods in publishing as well. You know, Marvel basically was bankrupt.
Yes.
Marvel,
that was in the 1990s.
Marvel.
For
heaven's sakes.
Bob Harris.
Right.
I mean, who's in charge of DC now?
Well, but at the same time, you know, the 90s were a dark time for comics, period.
True.
You know, all across the board, there were a lot of really, really bad things happening in comics.
Yeah.
A lot of that was Watchmen's fault. No offense to Watchmen. Or The Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
It was that, everything must be dark.
And we're still feeling the effects
of
that.
And giant shoulder pads and metal everywhere. And
yes.
Pointy, sharp things.
Big shoulders.
Big shoulders. Big shoulders.
Tiny waist.
And tiny waist. And little feet. What's wrong with those feet?
Little feet.
How could they do something?
Well, you know.
What's that line from Blazing Saddles? Those are amazing studs with such tiny feet.
It's funny because that's how the Bruce Timm Justice League, you know, the big mm-hmm. chest and, you know, the big torso and the tiny feet and the little legs. I mean, you look at the action figures.
Oh, sure.
Like, this is the same kind of thing. I was like, this is Liefeld.
Yeah, but the difference is that the Bruce Timm stuff owed a lot to the old Max Fleischer mm-hmm. cartoons.
Yeah, and he wasn't trying to be photorealistic in any sense of the word.
Right, and you end up with something that is certainly, especially the first wave, okay? I recently saw someone comparing the different waves of the Batman animated series,
mm-hmm.
and you looked at like, hey, when you guys changed the designs on things, some of them got a little weird, like Catwoman suddenly being ghostly white. And I mean, just you know, but Poison Ivy losing her curves.
Oh right,
becoming weird stuff like that. There was certainly some changes to it all, but it was an animated style. It was stylized, as opposed to the 90s where it was just what are you thinking?
I'm reading a list of some of the stuff that's coming into Convergence.
Yeah.
You remember, just imagine Stan Lee creating.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're coming back.
Right. I saw that.
I was like, okay. And they're going to be going up against the cyborgs from Future's End.
Oh, that'll be fun. Well, and I have to say that whatever DC is doing, mm-hmm. this whole Future's End Convergence thing, at least it's interesting. And it's been more interesting to me, and I've been reading some of Future's End, and I've had mixed feelings about the story,
right?
But at least it's an interesting thing, I'm finding that much more interesting, and Convergence much more interesting, and the stuff that they're doing right now so much more interesting than what they were doing when they kicked off New 52.
Yeah.
Well,
and now they're talking about. You know, at the end of Convergence 4, which is the last one, the mm-hmm. return of a villain, and a lot of people are thinking that the Anti-Monitor is coming back.
Right.
Which is why everybody's thinking, they're going to smash up all the universes again, and New 52 is going to go away, and now we're going to get some hybrid between New 52 and everything else that's come before that.
Well, which
might not be a bad thing.
But you and I have talked about this before, is that... You know, there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with having multiple universes.
No.
And
I like the multiverse.
I do too. And I want, and it'd be very, very, and they have clearly, they're clearly bringing it back. You know, it's back. In fact, it's been back for a little while. There is nothing wrong with bringing back the original universe that fans loved and still having the New 52 for the fans who love that too. Just because I don't like a lot of the New 52 doesn't mean that other people don't like it. Other people can like it just fine. Maybe they love the new version of Superman. Maybe they, maybe that stuff is just really, really speaking to them. Great. more power to him. Bring back my version of Superman, and I'm a happier guy. So, you know, why not have the multiple universes? I want the other Earth. I want the original Earth 2 and the new Earth 2 to meet.
Because
that could be fun.
Well, and I think too the idea here of having different ways that you could tell the stories, because Geoff Johns has already acknowledged that TV is the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
So, so given that we've already had that out there in the universe now, then that's actually been acknowledged,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that we do have an Earth 2 in mm-hmm. in the new 52 line,
right.
The multiverse is there.
Right.
The multiverse does exist. And that's, I guess, maybe given some pre-New 52 fans a little glimmer of hope that maybe this all... I've maintained from the very beginning that Pandora was the reset button.
Yeah.
And I still think at some point she's probably going to factor into this, whether it's, part of that whole Trinity of Sin or something, giving the question that whole background on him being Judas.
Right.
It doesn't work for me. I like Vic Sage.
I miss Vic Sage.
Yeah. But, that idea that there is a built-in reset button in all of this,
mm-hmm.
I think with Convergence, that reset button's going to get pushed.
Yeah. Oh, I think so, too.
But, it's just really going to be interesting to see how it does against Marvel. Because, Marvel's going to be doing it the exact same time.
Well, I think
that... where are you going to spend your money?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's a good question, because the thing is that right now, DC on TV has a big audience. So that could be a real drive to the comic books. And Marvel's got the big movies, so that could be a drive to the comic books. And it's an interesting time to be a comic book fan. Because it's everywhere.
It is.
It's for good or for ill, it's everywhere.
And it's all over our site as well. Because, it is. How many recaps are we doing right now? We're doing Gotham, we're doing Arrow, Flash.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be looking at this back half of Constantine, because it may be what we get.
Right.
There's a good chance the show's gonna be canceled.
Probably so.
Even though the guys at the studio, the studio heads basically said, we love the show,
mm-hmm. but yeah, well, and then you've got Supergirl's coming up and mm-hmm. Titans is coming up.
Did you see the pages for Supergirl that have hit the web?
I haven't yet.
Interesting stuff.
We'll have to check that out, and we can discuss that
mm-hmm.
on our DC specific podcast, which is called the Rogues Gallery,
mm-hmm.
and coming up on our next one. Very excited about this, but I'm not going to say anything yet because I don't want to jinx it, but we are going to have maybe... If all goes well and the stars align and the planets, kind of dog-leg a little bit, right? Then we are going to have a special guest who's got a very strong personal connection to DC Comics.
Yes.
And that's going to be coming up. We also have our Marvel podcast, which started out as just a discussion of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's expanded now. We're talking Agent Carter.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the cinematic universe. That's level 117, and you can find those both on our iTunes list, or if you need to do another app on an Android, we can go through Double Twist, OneCast. We're on Stitcher, so you can find all of our podcasts there, or you can find them, of course, at sci-fi4me.com. We do have an RSS feed you can subscribe to.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there is the Support Us button if you feel so inclined. We always welcome your comments or suggestions for topics on future shows. You can send us an email, h2o@sci-fi4me.com, or you can leave a comment on the site. And as always, we do invite you to share. If you enjoy these shows, I'm sure that you've got people that are of a mind, as it were. People who share your interest in the genre, and we would love to have more people listening to these shows. So,
yeah.
Excuse me. Okay, that one caught me by surprise. We don't have cough buttons.
We need cough buttons. Yeah, that is.
All right, so that's going to do it for us this time around. We have smashed this topic a little bit, rather thoroughly.
Yeah.
And we will be talking about it again, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, because when it all starts coming together, I'm sure we're going to have a lot to...
Oh, yeah.
to say when we start to look at this, when it starts happening.
And we can talk about it in, across various different shows.
Oh, yeah.
So we do invite you to continue to listen, and we do thank you for listening to this one. That's going to do it for us. Jason Hunt here along with Tim Harvey.
Thank you, folks.
And we do encourage you also to visit superherostuff.com. And that's going to do it for us. We are going to head out and be back next week. This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.
Podcasting is our superpower. This is SciFiForMe Radio.